You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Is a deficiency of omega-3 fatty acids in the American diet responsible for the current obesity crisis? In an article published in the September issue of Prevention magazine, Susan Alport links the dramatic recent gains in weight as well as the growing number of cardiac problems directly to the near elimination of omega-3s from American diets. Susan Alport is an award-winning science writer and the author of several books, including one about omega-3s called The Queen of Fats that was published 2 years ago by the University of California Press, and I'm very pleased to welcome her to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me on the show.
Now we associate omega-3s with fish or fish oil, but you explain that fish aren't the primary source of omega-3 fatty acids. Where do they come from?
Well, that's the interesting thing, that omega-3s originate in the green leaves of plants, not fish, as most of us think.
So why are fish thought to be a great source of omega-3s?
Well, for several reasons. Fish require more omega-3s in their diets and tissues than terrestrial animals do, and also because they are indeed good sources of omega-3s, but have you ever wondered why it is that humans who evolved on the savannas of Africa now seem to require the nutrients in cold water fish? It's because we've made ourselves deficient in those omega-3 fats in an interesting way, because these omega-3s are one of the families of essential fats, and they originate in the green leaves of plants. But the interesting thing is that they compete for positions in our cell membranes with the omega-6s, which are much more prevalent in the seeds of plants.
Until recently, weren't beef, pork, and even eggs good sources of omega-3s? We're starting to see eggs with omega-3 added now, but why? What happened? Why did that change?
Oh, well, all eggs used to be rich in omega-3s when the chickens that laid them were foraging for themselves on greens and insects and other wild things. But now that they're being fed these seeds and seed oils, they're much richer in this second family of essential fats, these omega-6s.
And beef are being fed corn.
Beef are being fed corn and soy, and they're also now sources of omega-6 fats, not the omega-3s.
Now, what happens if we don't get enough omega-3s in our diet?
Well, we need them in every tissue in our body, but the most metabolically active tissues, the brain, the eyes, the heart, the sperm, require huge amounts of these omega-3s. So what happens is that you're seeing these large epidemics of depression, other mental disorders, infertility, heart disease, all the things that affect those fast-acting tissues.
You say arthritis as well.
Arthritis as well. That's the first
thing. Insulin resistance?
Insulin resistance. They're required in the membranes of every cell in our body, and they affect how the enzymes work in those membranes.
Weren't omega-3s at one time included as an ingredient in processed foods like cookies, chips, cakes, breads, spreads?
I think they
when
are.
Did that change?
I think they are now being included, but at levels so low that they really don't make up for this essential imbalance in the fats.
You've explained in your article in Prevention and in your earlier book on the subject that the Western diet is not only deficient in omega-3s, but that it typically contains too many omega-6 fatty acids.
Yes, that's the
omega-6s
problem.
Are contained in the vegetable oils that are used in most of our processed foods these days?
Exactly. As we went from using animal fats as a source of our dietary fats to using seed fats, which we thought was a very good idea at the time, we became deficient in these omega-3 fats. Because as I said before, that these two families of fats compete with each other for positions in our cell membranes, such that if your diet is rich in the second family, the omega-6s, your tissues are going to be deficient in those omega-3s.
But why have we seen this change? It's been promoted by the government, hasn't it?
Yes. Well, you know, the seed oils, the vegetable oils, were found to decrease serum cholesterol. And serum cholesterol was once the big marker of risk for heart disease.
So when we started talking about not having a diet high in polyunsaturated
fats,
we were really talking about cutting omega-3s out of our diet?
Well, we didn't know we were doing that at the time. Omega-3s were recognized as being essential many decades decades after omega-6s were recognized as being essential. And essential means that we can't make these fats ourselves and that we have to consume them in our diet in order to have them.
So omega-6s were seen as being free of cholesterol and therefore better for our hearts than animal fats.
Exactly, exactly. But we didn't know at the time that by overwhelming our diets with those omega-6s, we were going to drive out the omega-3s.
Isn't there another problem in that omega-3s spoil in time?
That's another thing, that the omega-6s are really the darling of the food industry because they're so much less prone to oxidation or going rancid than these omega-3 fats. So it behooved them to eliminate the omega-3s.
When did scientists first discover that all of these omegas were not alike?
It's a gradual discovery. The first fats found to be essential were found to be essential in the 1930s. And then in the 1960s, scientists started discovering prostaglandins, which are those important cell messengers, and they found that cell messengers, whether they were made from these omega-3s or the omega-6s, acted very differently in the body. And then gradually it was found that omega-3s are concentrated in the brain and other active tissues. And then gradually it was found that they had different effects on heart disease.
And you point out that scientists have known since the early 1970s that omega-6s promote blood clotting and inflammation, which are two immediate and direct causes of heart disease. And yet we are promoting the use of omega-6s.
Right, because those are essential fats, so you can't live without them. So it was thought that you just had to take the good with the bad. But now we know that what's been happening is that we're living without the omega-3s, and we definitely can't do that. This could be put an end to a great many of our chronic conditions.
My guest is Susan, am I pronouncing it right, Allport?
Allport.
And she's written an article called The Vanishing Youth Nutrient for the current issue of Prevention magazine. She also has a book called The Queen of Fats, Why Omega-3s Were Removed from the Western Diet and What We Can Do to Replace Them, which was published a couple of years ago by the University of California Press. Has much changed since this book was published?
Well, I see a growing recognition of the different effects of omega-3s and omega-6s. At the time I published the book, few people were even aware of what omega-6s were. And now I see that people...
When I go to buy eggs, there are any number of egg boxes that have in large type contains rich in omega-3s. So people are starting to pay attention. Does that mean that we're starting to see more omega-3s in our food again?
Well, what we have to do, the fundamental thing, is to decrease our omega-6 intake. We require them, as I said. We require even more of them than we do omega-3s, but we don't need the ratio that we have now, which is like 10 to 1 omega-6s to 3s.
This discovery of the importance of omega-3s reminds me of the discovery 100 years ago of how important iodine was to human development and health before iodine was added to table salt. And some people developed goiters on their necks, and children were put at risk for mental retardation. Is it possible that the omega-3 deficit that now exists in the Western diet could be overcome as simply as we overcame the other by simply putting iodine in iodized salt?
Well, not quite so simply, but almost, by replacing the vegetable oils that we're currently consuming to ones that have a much better ratio of omega-3s to omega-6s, yes, I feel that we could address many of our chronic diseases.
You've written that it's useful to think of omega-3s as spring fats and omega-6s as fall fats. Can you explain that?
Yes, this was my contribution to the whole story of the omega-3s, which was that there's a biological rationale for why these two families of fats have such different effects, and that, one, they help animals to prepare for the future, for periods of activity and reproduction when the fats of leaves, the spring fats, the omega-3 fats, are available, and for periods of hunkering down and survival when the fats of the seed fats or the fall fats are more abundant.
So another way of saying that is omega-3s are associated with movement and expending energy, while omega-6s are associated with slowing down, storing fat, hibernation. I imagine that bears are full of omega-6s when they go into those caves.
Well, most researchers haven't controlled for the omega-3s and 6s in their research with hibernation, but there is one researcher who has, and he has found that the marmot, the yellow-bellied marmot, does not go into hibernation on an omega-3-rich diet. That animal has to switch to a diet rich in omega-6s before it will go into torpor.
What about, does it matter whether we live in colder climates or warmer climates?
I think that the ideal ratio probably differs depending on what climate you're in.
So omega-3s in a colder climate, omega-6s perhaps in a warmer climate?
Perhaps, but we want to stay active all year round. So we're looking for that balance of the two facts that will keep us active.
So when we take in omega-6s as our main source of vegetable fats year round, are we sending our bodies the signal that we need to store fat for the winter?
Exactly. Through all kinds of mechanisms, through increased production of fat cells, through decreased activity of the insulin receptor, all kinds of mechanisms.
Is this something that just happens in this country? Because we hear about the advantages of the Mediterranean diet and Japanese diet. You've pointed out that mortality from heart disease goes up linearly with consumption of omega-6s. 50 deaths per 100,000 in Japan, 90 in Mediterranean countries, and 200 in the United States. Now, the Japanese eat a lot of fish. The Mediterranean diet is rich in olive oil. Does olive oil contain a lot of omega-3s?
Not that many omega-3s, but what the Mediterranean diet does have is that it's very rich in fish and greens and other things. So it's not the olive oil that's probably providing them the benefit, but the fact that they're not using a very high omega-6 vegetable oil, and they're consuming all those other good things.
So is this something that's just happening in the United States? Or are we seeing,
we're
talking about the Western diet.
All through the Western countries. Israel has a particularly high rate of these chronic diseases, and it has a very healthy diet as far as our USDA food pyramid goes. It's very high in vegetables and very high in fish, but it uses large amounts of these seed oils, and the people there are suffering from heart disease and obesity and insulin resistance and diabetes at a rate that's similar to ours.
A listener, Marion from Manhattan, says, can your guest discuss the presence of trans fats in our diet and whether that may interfere with our ability to use the omega-3s that we do get?
The trans fat story is very interesting, and it's linked to the omega-3 story in this way. When fats were partially hydrogenated that produced trans fats, that was a process that specifically eliminates the omega-3s in those fats, and that produces the trans fats and even more omega-6s. So the question is, and it's a question on which the health of the country depends, is it the absence of omega-3s in those fats that's causing our problems, or is it the presence of those trans fats and even more omega-6s? I would suggest that there are very well-defined mechanisms to suggest that it's the absence of those omega-3s.
My guest is Susan Allport, A-L-L-P-O-R-T, who's written widely on issues related to food and health, an article in the current issue of Prevention magazine about omega-3s and omega-6s called The Vanishing Youth Nutrient. There's also a book, The Queen of Fats, Why Omega-3s Were Removed from the Western Diet and What We Can Do to Replace Them, that is published by the University of California Press. And we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with science writer Susan Allport, who has written about the disappearance of omega-3s from our diet in an article in Prevention magazine, the current issue of Prevention magazine, called The Vanishing Youth Nutrient. And she's also the author of a book about omega-3s called The Queen of Fats, which is published by the University of California Press. Does the scientific community currently accept the idea that omega-3 fatty acids are one of the essential fatty acids needed for good health?
Oh, yes, absolutely. That's accepted. so is the competition between the omega-3s and the omega-6s, though not many researchers control for that competition in their research, but it is, you know, widely accepted.
And since they are essential fatty acids that cannot be manufactured in the body, mm-hmm. we have to get them through our diet, which you say is has very little omega-3s these days. So does that mean that supplements will work?
Well, you say that we have very little omega-3s. Remember that the omega-3s originate in the green leaves of plants.
So as long as we're eating salads, are we doing okay?
Wait, let me just finish. And because green leaves, including the green leaves of the ocean, the phytoplankton, and the algae, are the most abundant thing on the planet, omega-3s are probably the most abundant fat on the planet. The only place that they're deficient is in the diet and the tissues of most Americans. And the only way they got to be deficient is because we're consuming so many of the competing fats, the omega-6s. So it's not that we have so little omega-3s in our diet. Our intake of omega-3s by numerous studies really hasn't changed that much. What has changed is our dramatic increase in omega-6s.
Now, a caller asks, what about omega-9? She's taking an omega-3-6-9 mix.
Which isn't the best idea, since we already have so many 6s in our diet, and we get omega-9s. They're a non-essential nutrient. We can make those ourselves, and they're the most abundant fat in olive oil, for example. We don't need to take extra ones of those. That's just adding calories to your diet that you don't need.
A listener wants to know, what happens if we don't get enough omega-6s? Are we also subject to certain diseases?
Yes, we could overdo our omega-3s, but it would take a lot to do that. But anything is possible. Perhaps the Eskimos, when they were eating their Aboriginal diet, were deficient in those omega-6s, and that they were prone to nosebleeds. They were prone to hemorrhagic stroke, other conditions that might be associated with a diet too rich in omega-3s.
Another caller asks, are the omega fats in eggs in the whites, the yolks, or both?
In the yolks.
Because
she
stopped eating yolks because of cholesterol.
Yes, well, that was a red herring.
And we have all these, right now I can go downstairs to Subway and get an all-white omelet.
It's really too bad, and we're giving the yolks to our dogs, and our dogs are much better nourished than we are. Yeah, no, they're in the yolk, so we need to eat the yolk. And that whole issue of decreasing the cholesterol in our diet, that has never really been shown to have any benefit for correcting heart disease. So that was a red herring.
A caller wonders if flaxseed oil is a good source of omega fatty acids.
It's an excellent source of omega-3
even though
fatty
it's
acid.
Seed?
It's a seed. Now, this is the thing that I need to explain, that most seeds are much richer in omega-6s than omega-3s, but not all seeds. And that gives us a good way to get out of this quandary that we are in.
So if we're just going out and buying some kind of a vegetable oil that we want to use when a recipe calls for vegetable oil, doesn't say specifically one kind or another, flaxseed oil would be good? What about canola oil?
Canola oil is the best, because flaxseed oil is so rich in threes that it might oxidize quickly and it might not be stable in cooking. So switch to canola, which is stable, doesn't oxidize. You want to, you know, keep it in a dark space as you would any oil. And that will provide you with these omega-3s.
But not corn oil, not soy.
Not corn oil, not soy. Soy has a ratio of about 1 to 7, 3s to 6s. Corn is 1 to 56. Sunflower and safflower, I can't remember what, 1 to 100. You know, very, very rich in those 6s.
It is still interesting that so much of our land these days is planted in corn and soy.
Yes, so those are the cheap fats, and they found our way into the foods, and they had a very unintended effect.
Another listener wants to know if you can explain why it's easy to damage fats in processing.
It's not that easy. You know, processors now know to keep the temperature at which they're doing this processing at certain levels, and to keep the time down to keep the damaging the the development of trans fats, et cetera, at a low level. So that is not a big issue.
Another listener wants to know if there's anything on the web that would give an idea of which foods are best for getting omega-3s and the right balance and which ones are the best for omega-6s.
If they go to my website, I have some databases on the home page of my website on the right-hand side, and they can get to them from there.
You said that omega-3s are play a role in brains, eyes, other organs. Do they appear naturally in breast milk?
Yes.
Because that would be important for the baby's development.
Exactly. They're concentrated in breast milk. They actually, you know, the mother needs to take supplements during pregnancy because they're actually concentrated in the developing fetus and then in breast milk.
But you point out in your book that manufacturers of baby formula have been reluctant to add omega-3s to their formulas. Any idea why?
That was in the past. Now they all have the omega-3s, but it's the parent fatty acid, the one that's found in the green leaves. We haven't talked about this, but those parent fatty acids are elongated in animals and turned into even more active unsaturated fats in animal bodies. So because that process, that transformation is slow, it's best to provide infants, and breast milk has the already preformed elongated fats in it.
What are the current government regulations as far as infant formulas are concerned? Are there still some out there that don't contain omega-3s?
No, they all contain that parent omega-3 fat, but only few of them. People have to be educated enough and wealthy enough to afford the formulas with the DHA and the EPA in it.
My guest is Susan Allport. She has she wrote a book called The Queen of Fats, Why Omega-3s Were Removed from the Western Diet and What We Can Do to Replace Them, published by the University of California Press, available in paperback. And she has an updated article in the current issue of Prevention magazine under the title The Vanishing Youth Nutrient. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. The Vanishing Youth Nutrient, because this is particularly important for us when we're young?
Well, it's important to the developing brain. So the article begins with the story of a little girl who was diagnosed with apraxia at the age of 2. She wanted to speak, but she couldn't speak. And her mother had happened to attend one of my lectures and thought, well, it can't hurt to give her some of these omega-3 fatty acids. And she began supplementing this child's orange juice, and the child was babbling in a week. Now, that's just an anecdote.
It might not happen with the next kid.
It might not happen, but I have heard, to the publication of this article, I've heard from other parents that have said the same thing happened with their children. So, yes, it is very important to the development of young brains.
There's often resistance among scientists to changes until they have a personal experience. And you tell the story of Ralph Holman, who watched his own mother die in a hospital because of what she was being fed.
Right. And that was because she was made omega-6 deficient because there was no way to deliver fats in the intravenous formula at that time. So
this is the early 60s?
This was the early 60s. So now when you have an intravenous formula, you're going to get both the omega-3 and the omega-6 fats in that. But at that time, they were deficient in all fats because it gooed up the system and you couldn't deliver fats that way. So he watched as his mother became omega-6 deficient. And then he went on to look at that deficiency as it occurs in the general public. And what he found was people weren't deficient in omega-6 fatty acids, but they were deficient in those omega-3 fatty acids. So he did numerous measurements of different populations and found that to be the case.
A listener wants to know if drinking milk from grass-fed cows will have any effect, or eating beef from grass-fed cattle, because we're starting to see those things in our stores.
Which is all great thing, because all these animals used to be much richer in omega-3s when the diet that they were on was greens instead of seeds. And so even though the meat from a grass-fed cow isn't as rich in omega-3 fats as a piece of salmon, it's going to provide you with those fats, and you're not going to be eating at the same time meat that's heavy with these omega-6 fatty acids. So you're going to be able to get that right balance in your tissues with them.
Paul asks, he says, I love sardines to obtain omega-3. Does the olive oil in compete with obtaining the 3? Would being packed in water be better? I assume I could ask the same question about tuna.
Exactly. You can ask that, but and that there is a certain amount of competition, but we don't store these fats. They're either burned for energy or they're going to make it into our membranes. Most of them are going to be burned for energy and just go out. So the issue is not to get the most omega-3s you can at any one meal. The question is to have a source of omega-3s and not too many omega-6s at every meal. And that way your tissue will find the right balance.
A caller recently has seen omega-7 supplements. Have you heard anything about
them? No, they're not an essential fat. So,
another person asks, are omega-3 supplements effective, or do we need to get them from food?
All nutrients are better absorbed from food than through supplements, but if you're not able to find them in your general diet, then yes, supplements are effective.
A caller says he or she is following an organic vegan diet and wonders if his diet is short in omega-6s as a result.
No, probably not. Probably short in the omega-3s.
Despite the fact that he's eating green vegetables?
No, I think for his calories, he's probably consuming a great deal of seeds and seed fats.
Mm-hmm. So people eat a lot of soy, tofu, and the like.
Right, when they're vegan.
And that's all from omega-6 kinds of things?
Yes, yeah. So he would be deficient in the 3s.
And nuts, are there some nuts that are better than others?
Oh, yeah. The walnuts are one of those seeds that has a good ratio. So if you can just substitute your snacking on almonds for walnuts, you'll get a nice little kick of omega-3s with those.
A listener who is pulling into Fairway as we speak asks if there are any fruits that have omega-3s.
Well, actually, there are. Raspberries, for example. All these foods have different ratios of them. All green leaves are mostly the omega-3 fats. But seeds have varying ratios, seeds and fruits. So I just happened to see that raspberries are a very good source of omega-3s.
And you suggested earlier that there are certain cuisines that are better for us than others?
Yes.
If you had to move to some country and eat the food, where would you go?
Well, Japan obviously would be a good one. The Japanese have about a 4-to-1 ratio of those 6s to 3s in their diet, and they have the lowest incidence of chronic diseases, the longest lifespan. So I suppose it would be Japan, though personal preference may be France or Italy.
On the other hand, we have real concerns about pollution in our seas and overfishing.
Right. And this understanding of the competition between these essential fats allows us a way to take the pressure off of our fish stocks. We don't need fish to give us the omega-3s we need in our tissues. What we need is small amounts of fish, perhaps, but decreasing the competing omega-6 fats. So this is a really a way out of this quandary that we've been finding ourselves.
A listener asks if there's a difference between omega-3s and essential fatty acids, and if so, how are they different?
Well, the omega-3s are one of the two families of essential fats. The other is the competing omega-6s. So, mm-hmm. No, they are the same.
And when you say competing, this is the thing that we really have to understand,
yeah,
that they compete in our bodies?
They compete for enzymes.
And does the 6 usually win out? Is that what happens?
No, the 3 usually wins out. If we're consuming about 3 times as many 6s to omega-3s, we're going to have an equal amount of the two families in our tissues, and that's what we want. But if you overwhelm that that preference with 10 times or 20 times as many 6s to 3s, that's when we run into trouble.
We've been talking about health policy in this country recently, and as you said earlier, we are promoting the use of omega-6s as government policy. Should this be written into the health bill?
This should definitely be written into the health bill, because this this competition between them and the omega-6s have many well-defined mechanisms whereby they promote diabetes, obesity, and heart disease. And there's no reason for them not to be acknowledged now. What I found, though, is that it is the consumer in the driver's seat. The consumer can make these things change very quickly, as they did with the trans fats and as they did with the Atkins diet.
Just one more thing. A caller wonders about coconut oil, which is ubiquitous out there.
Yeah, and coconut oil is very high in saturated fats and isn't very rich in these omega-3s. And it's a healthy fat in the context of a tropical diet, which is very rich in fish and greens. It's not that healthy when added to the American diet, which already has a great deal of saturated fats in it.
Now, if I brought a panel of nutritionists in here, would they all be nodding their heads as you talk?
Some of them would.
Some of them would disagree with you?
Yeah, some of them would definitely disagree.
And what would their argument be?
Well, their argument would be that we need those omega-6s. They're essential.
But you're not saying we don't.
No, I'm not at all saying that we don't. But that's a step that they haven't taken to realize that this competition is what's really essential for sound, healthful eating.
Susan Allport's article, The Vanishing Youth Nutrient, is in the current issue of Prevention magazine. There's also her book, The Queen of Fats, Why Omega-3s Were Removed from the Western Diet and What We Can Do to Replace Them, which is published by the University of California Press. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, it was my pleasure.